from WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Voters turned out in larger numbers for this year's municipal elections. Brunswick County saw a 2% increase compared to 2017. In Pender County, turnout ticked up about a point and a half. And in New Hanover County, 19% of registered voters cast a ballot. That's the biggest jump, nearly 4.5 points compared to 2017. Wilmington's mayor since 2006, Bill Saffo, held onto his seat by a very thin margin, just 4 points or 630 votes. Challenger Kevin Spears had the second highest number of votes in the Wilmington City Council race, pushing incumbent Paul Lawler down to fourth place and out of his seat by 6 votes. In Southport, the mayor and aldermen in both wards lost their seats to challengers. In Leland, four-term mayor Brenda Bozeman easily won her race against a challenger who was hard to find except on election day. Leland Town Council added a new member, Veronica Carter, who also won the most votes. But there was only one incumbent in that race, and Bob Campbell kept his seat. Also in Leland, voters ousted the one H2Go board incumbent running, who has historically opposed building a separate reverse osmosis plant. Voters overwhelmingly sent the two pro-RO candidates to take seats. Today, we'll take a look at the issues and the candidates in this year's elections. Joining me on today's reporter roundtable is Vicki Janowski, editor of the Greater Wilmington Business Journal. Vicki Janowski, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for doing this, Rachel.
Great to have you with us. And I'm also very glad to welcome WECT and WSFX Evening Anchor, who also directs political coverage for both stations, John Evans, and the new grandfather, John Evans.
I am. Thank you. Appreciate it, Rachel. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. And I'd like to extend a warm welcome to our live studio audience. We are broadcasting from the MC Ernie Gallery during the live Thursday show. And while we can't take phone calls today, we do welcome emails. Did you vote this year? Why or why not? What was the issue or the candidate who drove your voting? You can email us at coastline@whqr.org, and we've also collected a few questions from our studio audience that we'll incorporate into today's discussion. So what do you make of the first real challenge that Wilmington Mayor Bill Saffo faced since his first election in 2007? John Evans.
I think it was fascinating to watch as the night went on. I think for an incumbent who had historically been winning by getting 84, 86, 90, 92% of the vote in recent elections. Our reporter, Emily Featherston, who was at City Hall on election night, as we were watching the results come in and getting the results in from the State Board of Elections website, said, you know, the mayor is kind of shocked. You know, I think he knew ahead of time that it was going to be a tighter race than many of us knew it was going to be.
Were you not taking Devin Scott as seriously as a challenger? And I don't mean that in terms of...
No, I was. I mean,
Because we do have a big black information hole here when it comes to, you know, we don't have polls. We don't really have a sense except anecdotally.
I think Devin and his team did a great job of getting his message out. I think the fact that you did candidate interviews, we did candidate interviews, he took advantage of many of those. He appeared at a lot of different functions. I think his team did a great job of getting his message out. And I think he talked about some things that were very topics that a lot of people care about, especially when it comes to the living quality of life things rather than brick and mortar kind of political hard issues. I think he was talking about things like preserving green space. He was talking about livability issues. And I think it resonated. I think they did a great job. And I think that that's something that the mayor is going to realize as he goes the next 2 years. You know, more people are paying attention to what I'm doing here. And he even said on election night, he brought things out that we're going to be talking about, and we're going to make sure we have conversations about them.
Why do you think it has been like that? Why has Bill Saffo been able to enjoy this very long run without a serious challenger for more than a decade?
Well, and one thing that was interesting, I know we were talking about earlier, was I don't think any of us remember seeing a campaign video from, or a campaign commercial from Bill Sappho, at least not since I've been here. And now I came after that very first race with him and Harper Peterson, but I don't remember one since I've been here. And so I think, you know, he's had challengers before, but a lot of times it's been kind of challengers railing against the job he's doing. And while Devin Scott certainly campaigned against status quo, he wasn't necessarily campaigning just against Bill Sappho. He was campaigning against a change, but, you know, he put together a platform. He took canvassing seriously. He went to neighborhoods, you know, like Love Grove, that he said he wanted to engage a segment of voters that don't feel represented in Wilmington. And so I think that, like, as John was saying, that did resonate. When he talked about his platform, you know, he had phrases in there such as green space, you know, entrepreneurial type things, quality of life, smart growth, renewable energy.
Right.
So I think those things, at least even if you just look on social media, that resonated with whether or not people knew him. Even though, you know, he was a new name, they probably didn't know much about him or his background in business or the tech world. But just saying some of those specific recommendations, I think, also appealed to you know, a younger demographic, a certain segment of progressive folks that are concerned about the environment or concerned about smart growth and planning. So I don't think it's necessarily, there are topics where he and Mayor Sappho are not that far off. They're both Democrats. We'll talk about this, I think, a little bit more later, but that's not necessarily labeled on municipal election ballots. But I think he did tap into another segment, or at least energized a base that was different enough from who Mayor Sappho had had in previous challenges.
And so then, is this the first time then that social media was really a player in this particular race?
I think for Devin's base and word of mouth, and who, you know, trying to extend his reach as someone whose name people weren't familiar with, you know, turnout will also speak to, I'm sure, as well. It was higher, but it's still about 19-20% of the population. You know, they're Mayor Sappho's traditional supporters, there's not that many races on the ballot either, so there's not a whole lot of, like, incentive for people to turn out beyond those two races. So, you know, Mayor Sappho has had a pretty easy time being reelected in the past. It's possible that many of his supporters did not have that same motivation to turn out.
And if you look at the map where Devin did well, it's right along downtown, right in the northern part of downtown Wilmington as you get out toward MLK Parkway and such. And if you look at it, that's an area that's undergoing an awful lot of change right now. You're talking about a massive construction project building downtown. You're talking about the building going on right next to the Holmes Bridge. You're talking about the new project they're planning when you come in to downtown on that MLK Parkway area. So that's an area where people are concerned about the green space. They're concerned about some of those areas like the parks. They're concerned about what's happening right there where they live and where they breathe. And so, you know, as Vicky brought up, it's some of those areas, but it's also some of the areas that are undergoing some of the biggest change right now in the city of Wilmington. And I think that kind of comes right along with his, you know, his platform of those issues.
When you look at the Wilmington City Council race and you see that challenger newcomer, I mean, I guess Kevin Spears actually ran for the new Hanover County Board of Education a few years ago, but this will be his first political office that he holds. Is that the same dynamic happening in terms of ousting the incumbents? Because now, you know, this was kind of a surprise upset. You've got position number three, Neil Anderson, versus Paul Lawler, who was pushed out by 6 votes, which
that could change.
Could change.
But when you get provisionals and absentees.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But is that the same demographic? But the people who put Kevin Spears at number two versus the people who didn't vote for the others?
I mean, I think incumbents are always going to have a tougher time when you have this low of a election pool that you're talking about. It makes it a little bit unknown what's going to happen, but definitely Kevin, who did have some more name recognition because of his previous run, but, you know, he and Devin, again, I think they made it a focus of their campaigns to address communities that they feel are underserved. And together, I think they were able to rally some voters to turn out, that had the motivation to turn out. Again, when we talk about voter turnout in a race like this, I mean, you've got to be highly motivated to vote in a municipal election.
And it's, right. You know, you said earlier, it's a 4-point jump. And I think it's great to celebrate that. But in the overall big umbrella picture, 1 out of 5 people are voting to decide the leadership in this city for the next 2 and 4 years, where a 4-point jump is great, but it's still pretty sad that only 1 in 5 people are getting out to vote.
We shouldn't be patting ourselves on the back for that. Okay, and Vicki, you talked about the fact that 19% represents a pretty specialized cohort. And this is something, you know, whenever we talk to political scientists about who's voting in municipals versus midterms or presidential elections, that's what they say. It's this very engaged population. But which one is it? Is it kind of the traditional Wilmingtonians who are showing up, who the power brokers who historically have had a stake? Or is it this new, younger, energized cohort? And you're going to answer that when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's an election postmortem with the Greater Wilmington Business Journal's Vicki Janowski and WECT's John Evans. When we come back from this break, we'll also have a look at how news organizations covered this year's municipal elections and whether news coverage is changing along with the campaigns. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, tell us why you voted this year, send an email to coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. It's a post-election reporter roundtable with WECT's John Evans and the Greater Wilmington Business Journal's Vicki Janowski. And we want to hear from you on this Thursday. If you voted, what or who drove you to the polls? Was it civic duty? Was it a candidate? Was it an issue that fired you up? And if you didn't vote, tell us why. You can email us during the live Thursday discussion at coastline@whqr.org. So just before we went to break, I did what I always do and asked a very long, complicated question that no one could possibly answer. But who is this specialized cohort who votes? And we actually had somebody in our live studio audience ask a similar question. How representative are off-year elections when only 20%? Well, this may have to do with whether this is a harbinger of things to come for 2020. But who are these people who vote in the municipal elections? Vicki Janowski.
Yeah, these off-year municipal elections, on one hand, they're really interesting because they are people who are purely voting on local politics. There are no, this is not down ballot voting. They are not just turning out to vote in the presidential election. They are solely coming out for, in Wilmington's case, the two races that were on the ballot. So on one hand, it's very interesting because this is purely who can get out the most support. And as we'll talk about, these razor-thin returns, with when you're talking about 6 votes difference, I mean, it really makes a difference as to whether one street in the neighborhood goes or doesn't go. I was, you know, impressed with the turnout just because of the rain. You would think that, which has in the past been enough to dampen turnout. So on one hand, that's interesting to see. It's really who can make the most connection, who can energize their base, who can convince people that it is worth, you know, that their vote is going to matter. You know, I was talking with Aaron King. He's a political science professor at UNCW, and you know, his point that he always makes to his students are, you know, in presidential elections, you get more like 60-65% turnout. You know, these midterms, more like 45-50. So on one hand, it is good that you see people are responding to specific local, you know, they're engaged enough in local politics to turn out and make these decisions. On the other hand, like we pointed out, it is 20%. So no, it's not representative of the entire city's interests and population. So the point, you know, Dr. King makes to his students are, we spend the majority of our time, maybe not us because we're still covering local discussions, right. But if you think about, you know, the conversations you have about politics amongst yourselves and with friends or at dinner party, you know, most of our time and attention is spent on the national political right. scene. Yeah. And there were some races this week that were anomalies. They don't normally reflect national politics, even in governor's races, gubernatorial races, but, you know, Kentucky, right. one example where it did jump over into the national side. So we spent a lot of time and attention and discussion around what's going on nationally. But if you look at what is going to affect your daily life the most, it is these municipal level elections, county commission elections, which we'll see next year. I mean, the votes they take, and there are several examples that we've had, you know, this year and will come again next year, that significantly can change a community. So,
and you talk about the fact that people focus so much on those presidential elections, and there is this plethora of information about those, you know, that race and some of the other federal races. But I thought it was interesting that USA Today was reporting on an American a survey that's done every election year, I guess, for the American Psychological Association. 56% of U.S. adults identify the 2020 elections as a significant stressor. And that's an increase from 2016, when 52% of Americans said they were stressed by the election. So this one, the municipal elections, is there any link between what happened just a couple of days ago and what is likely to happen in this region in November 2020, John Evans?
I don't think so. I don't read into that very much. And, you know, I'm sure there'd be five or six experts that, if they're listening or watching, would disagree with me. You know, to me, the municipal election has always been, it's more personality-driven to me than issue-driven. And I say that because I'm more apt to see a Bill Sappho, a Devin Scott, a Kevin Spears, a Margaret Haynes, a Paul Lawler. I'm more apt to see them in the grocery store. I'm more apt to see them at Thalian Hall for an event. I'm more apt to see them at a fundraiser that I do on the weekends. I see my state senator, my state representative, less than that. I see my congressman and my U.S. senator less than that. And how many people in their entire lives are going to meet the president of the United States? And so they identify more, to me, they identify with the person who they see. And if they see that person in their realm, and I mean that as in, if they're going to the same, I'm just going to pull out JDRF, American Heart Walk, if they're in the same kind of venue than I am, and they're going to say, well, I'm more apt to think that they may think the same way I do. And so they identify with them more, and they're more apt to be able to go and vote.
Does that
they
mean
may ask a question about where they stand on something, but I think it's a more identifiable kind of thing rather than a homework on where A, B, C, and D stands on an issue.
So you're saying they also see them as more of a fully a full human being.
Yeah, exactly.
Than a D or an R.
And that's why I don't think what's going to happen next year, I don't think it's a harbinger. It may be, and there may be somebody who digs deep and says if a certain percentage of Republicans vote in an off year, it's going to be a landslide for Republicans or Democrats or whatever. I just think it's more identifiable to a human being person than it is an issue in a municipal election.
Yeah.
Well, and also, you know, the other unique thing about the municipal election, when you say R&D, there is no R&D on the ballot.
Right.
So you don't also get the voter behavior where you are maybe turning out for a particular race or the presidential race
right.
or statewide races and then just party vote, even if you don't know who the candidates are. So they may have been turning out to vote for Mayor Sappho or Devin, but then, you know, they had to be familiar with the council members. That wasn't a crutch, the party mm-hmm. Affiliation. So that also is another way why this, you know, you have to maybe even more so than the presidential ballots, like make connections with voters in order to break through the noise there.
What do local candidates have to deal with when they decide to run for office? Is it
I think it is different from state and federal mm-hmm. level races, yeah. And you get many more people who don't have higher political aspirations, but who just really are fired up by an issue, or they feel a calling to public service of one kind or another. But even in Wrightsville Beach, WECT did a story about the outgoing mayor, Bill Blair, who was not running again.
Right.
A challenge to his residency, mm-hmm. I think, in that municipality.
Right.
And he wound up being vindicated, I think. But his point, I mean, what he said to you guys was, this is what people have to deal with, and this is why good people don't run for office. And I've heard that across municipalities from some other folks. In fact, spoke to one candidate on election day who said to me, well, you know what I have to deal with. And I said, no, actually, I don't. What do you have to deal with? And didn't have the chance to unpack that. But what do local folks face?
I think it's worse now. And, you know, I think the advent of social media now has made it even tougher for people who just want to serve. I mean, somebody has a career and wants to, you know, retires and say, I want to give back. You know, Bill Blair, the challenge was raised on his where his property is in Landfall, which is under contract to sell. The allegation was that he wasn't living, his primary residence wasn't in Wrightsville Beach. And, you know, a complaint was raised in front of the elections board. It happened the night before elections. And his comment was, yeah, this is what you have to deal with. But I actually think that social media and the advent of social media now is making it even more difficult for people who go out and pay their fee and just want to go out and serve. Because everybody has one of these. And for those of you who are listening, I'm holding up my cell phone. Everybody's got a phone. Everybody's got a camera on that phone. And no matter where you are, you're under the auspices of the public knowing what you're doing. And, you know, it's for people who have not spent that time under the microscope for a while, all of a sudden having that is a lot more difficult and a lot more pressure-filled than they're ever used to in the past.
We heard from a listener, Jim. He writes, I vote in every election and always have since 1976. It's just what you do to be a good citizen. Mayor Saffo has been doing a good job. But he needs to get the message, says Jim, that the status quo is not sustainable. I voted for smart development, more green space, and housing, affordable housing. I think we know what Jim's issue is, but is this something that you heard in the run-up to the election?
Mm-hmm.
Vicki Janowski, I think you mentioned affordable housing is one of the issues that Devin Scott was talking about.
Yeah, and, you know, to his credit, this has been discussed for years, but it's continuing to be ongoing, and it's not something that's unique to our community. Many other cities are trying to get their handle around affordable housing. You see it's extrapolated much more in California, where they have, housing prices are just, they're at the point where it's monopoly money. It's so, not realistic. But basically, I think, and again, I came here maybe towards the end of the recession and when the recovery started, but ever since I've been here, development, traffic has always been a thing that's been discussed. There have been projects ever since I have been here and building projects. So that's nothing new, and people will always, have issues that what comes along with that development, and that will always be a political campaign in any election cycle, since I've been here. Obviously, I hear discussion about traffic and density and smart growth a lot more than I had in the past. And this is someone who's moved from Atlanta, who thought it was interesting that people complained about traffic on South College. But,
yeah.
After a decade, I find myself in that same boat, too.
Well, when your GPS is telling you that you just added 2 minutes to your trip because you had to sit at that light, that's traffic, Vicki Janowski. That's tongue-in-cheek.
Don't get in the car behind Rachel Lisa. A little road rage. Development is one of the most significant issues we have faced and are going to continue to face. And, traffic, we joke about everyone complaining about it, but you just look at the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge and how, the traffic projections for what's going to happen there and how that needs to be replaced. I mean, it drives so much of how this community is going to, what it's going to look like in 20 years. And so people, I think this will, even though it has been a an issue that comes up in every race and every campaign, I think that pressure is just going to continue to build and build.
And somebody in our live studio audience actually asked, have you heard that that replacement bridge for Cape Fear Memorial Bridge will be a toll bridge? I hear different things about whether that project is still completely dead. Of course, we know that the Department of Transportation ran out of cash and had to just put a delay on a lot of major issues that had been already prioritized. But what are you hearing around town about the future of that third Cape Fear crossing?
Well, I kind of want to know who wrote the card. Is that something you've heard?
Well, it's been talked about. I mean, you know, it was one of the ways that they talked about possibly funding it. I mean, you're looking at the better part of now $1 billion of what they're talking about. And, you know, I mean, I go up to Raleigh every once in a while, and I don't think they have $1 billion sitting around in, you know, along Jones Street up there. So they've talked about different ways to fund it. And the mayor said, the mayor brought up a great point. I wasn't obviously here when they built the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge, but he said at the time when it happened, it was the most expensive project in North Carolina history when they built the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge, transportation-wise. And so if you're talking about $1 billion bridge, it's likely going to be the most expensive project in North Carolina if they build that here. But, you know, they didn't have social media back then, and people, you know, airing their opinion and all the other stuff. But yeah, I think they're going to continue to have to advocate for it. Whether it ever gets put back on that list again, I don't know. But I think that they'll never stop talking about it because they realize that there's going to come a time when the Cafer Memorial Bridge is going to have to either be replaced or refurbished. And can you imagine when they're doing that, how much traffic is going to be on the Holmes Bridge and the 140 Bridge? You know, I don't know if I'll be driving at that time, but, you know, I don't necessarily want to think about that.
And the, I mean, we've been covering the DOT short funding. I don't think we even fully realize what the impacts of that are going to be, you know, for our projects, but also projects in other parts of the state. That's a very significant issue.
Yeah.
You're listening to Coastline. It's a post-election reporter roundtable with WECT's John Evans and the Greater Wilmington Business Journal's Vicki Janowski. We also have a live studio audience today. We're taking a look at how voters expressed themselves on Tuesday, and we'd like to hear from you. Did you vote in Tuesday's municipal elections? Why or why not? You can send an email to coastline@whqr.org. Alicia writes, municipal elections are some of the most important elections we have a civic duty to participate in. They literally affect me where I live. I've lived in Wilmington for 11 years, she writes, a lifelong North Carolina resident, haven't missed an election since 18. Wow, Alicia. I'm 55-year-old white female registered Democrat, live on the north side. I voted because I have the privilege. Voted for Paul Lawler and for Devin Scott. Disappointed neither were elected. The turnout was also disappointing for me. Thank you. Let's talk about how the results might change and what a vote canvas means. And this is something, of course, we have to unpack every election. The vote canvas happens November 15th, I believe.
Next Friday. Whatever next Friday is.
Yeah. It's so
you're right. You're right. 15th. You're right.
15th.
Yeah.
They'll do most of the work Thursday then too, and do the informal counting through, and then certify.
Yeah. So what does that mean? I mean, what are they doing at the canvas, and how much could actually change, John Evans?
A lot of it depends on how many provisional ballots and/or absentee ballots were filed. They will take all of those provisional ballots where if you go to a precinct and you're not on the list to vote at that precinct, you can request and fill out a provisional ballot. They will take those. They will see if those votes should be counted or not, why somebody voted at the precinct they were not supposed to be. They'll take absentee ballots, and we all have had a lot of experience with absentee ballots in the last year. And so they'll take all those. They'll add all those in. It's likely there will be many more of them in the city of Wilmington than there will be in Carolina Beach, but yet there are two races separated by six votes. You've got the Neil Anderson, Paul Lawler, third seat in the city of Wilmington right now, separated by six votes. So there likely will be enough absentee and provisionals that could change that one way or the other. In Carolina Beach, you have the second council seat down there separated by six votes between Henry and Shuttleworth. you don't know if there's going to be that many down there that would change that dynamic. So once they get all of those, they'll add those in, and then Friday when they come back, they'll just take all the totals from the different precincts, make sure that they are all matching, and then declare the ballots and the results official on Friday.
So in Carolina Beach, they're also, they just elected a mayor who,
first female.
Yes, first female, and she also has an unexpired term.
Correct.
Right, so they're going to have to appoint somebody.
Yes.
To take her seat.
That could be Steve Shuttleworth if the election results stay the way they are with Mr. Hardy
and Lynn Barbie and Jay Healy.
I'm sorry. If they keep their seats, Shuttleworth having had experience, the council could turn to him to appoint him to fill out Leanne Pierce's final 2 years. So a lot of things are going to be happening along down the way, but it'll be interesting to watch and see how all that unfolds as well.
And then, you know, of course, the other mechanism they have is after the canvas and the results are official, they can, if they're within 1%, they can ask for a recount, which certainly some of these races are.
Yep.
Right. And how often do either of you know, have you ever seen a recount where it changes the election after the canvas? Okay, and we have 1 minute left, so we'll think about that during the break, maybe look at the Googles and see what we come up with. You're listening to Coastline. It's a post-election reporter roundtable with the Business Journal's Vicki Janowski and WECT's John Evans. We're taking a look at what voters had to say when they went to the polls on Tuesday. If you'd like to weigh in during the live Thursday discussion, you can send an email to coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from this break, it'll be the last segment and the last chance for you to get your question or comment in. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. 2019 was an election year for municipalities in the Cape Fear region, most towns, cities, and villages in North Carolina. The voters spoke on Tuesday, and today, Vicki Janowski, editor of the Greater Wilmington Business Journal, and John Evans, evening anchor and director of political coverage at WECT and WSFX, are with me today for a post-election discussion. Did you vote this year? If so, what drove you to the polls? If you didn't, why didn't you? Tell us about it. During the live Thursday discussion, you can send an email to coastline@whqr.org. It is the last segment, so we have just a few minutes left to get listener comments and questions in about the municipal election. Just before we went to break, we were talking about a recount and what is likely to happen or what can happen during recounts. And New Hanover County Commissioner Rob Zappel, who is in the live studio audience, just shared with me that in 2014, there was a local judgeship that was reversed during a recount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It can certainly happen. It doesn't often break that way, nor during the canvassing does it after the provisional ballots. It doesn't usually change results, but again, we're talking like a handful of votes in these two races that John had mentioned. You know, if you remember last year, Harper Peterson and Michael Lee on the state Senate race, that on election night was like 36 votes difference. They did the canvass, which is what we were talking about with the provisional votes, and that went up to more like 200 vote spread. So Michael Lee did not ask for a recount in that one. I thought it might be helpful for today's discussion. Before we came here, I checked in with New Hanover County's election director, Ray Hunter Havens, just to find out how many of those provisional ballots are out there that we're talking about, that, you know, Paul Lawler might be keeping an eye on. And she said they're still going through them. She estimates they have about 180 provisionals out there, maybe another 20 on top of that, because they're still gathering all of them. So that's potentially another 200 votes that we're talking about. There's also, I thought this was interesting. She also mentioned there's about 100 write-in ballots, which you wouldn't think would make any difference at all. But you have to keep in mind that some people will especially for city council where it says, you know, pick three, they'll pick a name, but they'll write in their other two names, even though it's already on the ballot. She says that happens a little more often than you think it would. People get confused by the instructions. And so as long as, you know, it's not a double vote, they didn't bubble it in and write the candidate in, that will count towards these folks, and it did not show up in the returns on Tuesday. So, you know, again, I'm sure they're, you know, Steve Shuttleworth and Paul Lawler, I'm sure they're keeping very close eye on the count and what happens. And I mean, all of us are as well. I mean, that could be a significant change.
Yeah, yeah, we'll be following that. Mike writes, the lack of civility by the Sunset Beach Town Council motivated me to get out and vote. City and town councils can't afford communication breakdowns and ill will that have become the rule in state and federal legislatures. And, you know, I have to say, throughout these the months leading into this election, I heard this across municipalities from candidates, not necessarily the ill will, but the communication breakdown between the local government body and the citizens. And I think we saw that really show up in the Southport race when this, for a long time, well-liked mayor, Jerry Dove, was ousted by a pretty large margin, and all of the incumbents on the Board of Aldermen were also ousted by political newcomers. People were pretty frustrated.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how Jerry Dove and Joe Pat Hatem had, this is the third time they've run against each other.
Yeah.
And Jerry Dove won the first two, and he won 2 years ago by 13 votes. And then this time, Joe Pat Hatem ended up, like you said, I think it was almost 2-1, 63-37, something like that.
It was close.
And I think you can look at, you know, some of the other areas where there have been issues. Sunset Beach, the sitting mayor was voted out.
Paul By Van Shannon Warmer. Hot Dog Phillips.
Hot Dog Phillips.
And I only put that in the copy on the air. That's a that's
no,
a
that was on the ballot that
reach,
way.
But so we're going to start covering Sunset Beach because Hot Dog we get Phillips. To say and, Mayor Hot Dog
and
Phillips.
It was on the ballot, Hot Dog Phillips, and he's going to be the new mayor in Sunset Beach. And, you know, I think that, you know, that's a great story, personally.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who you know, had a desire to go out there, and I'm not saying it's a great story because Mr. Van Warmer lost, and please don't say that. I'm saying it's somebody who just thought that they wanted to go out and help,
right.
And they went out, and he made a website about it, and he said, I've sold hot dogs, I'm going to put hot dog on the ballot, and people voted for him. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out in the next 4 years.
Well, you're talking about also, you know, incumbents and how they fared in this election. I mean, also the H2GO election,
right.
the current chair getting voted out by the two candidates, newcomers who solely campaigned on the reverse osmosis plant. I mean, that election was a referendum on how you felt about whether or not they should be building that plant or not.
They ran in teams in that election, which is unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the Jeff Gerken, who was the chair you're talking about, ran with John Bradley, and that was their platform. And that is so complicated now because there's this legal battle among three entities, the town of Leland and the town of Belleville and H2GO itself, and what this election is going to mean in terms of how that agreement shakes out, I think, is an open question.
Well, the mayor, Mike Allen, told us yesterday that he said that you know, he's going to move forward. Belleville will move forward with likely dropping the appeal of the judge's decision to give all of the assets back. And so I think as soon as those members are sworn in, I think you'll see some of that action start fairly quickly after that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, if you would have thought, you know, 2.5 years ago before then that the water utility race would be the most, like, soap opera political intriguing race that we have, you would not have believed it. But, you know, 2017, that's when Von Hagerty and the Star News broke the story about Gen X.
Right.
And that continues, you know, 2.5 later to affect our political landscape. People are very passionate about water quality issues now more than, you know, they were before.
Yeah. Judy writes, driving past my regular polling place at Ogden Elementary on Tuesday, I was surprised to see vote here signs. I pride myself on never missing an election, so I went in thinking there was an issue on the ballot I didn't know about. Turned out it was for municipal residents, only of which there is only one in Ogden due to the city of Wilmington's annexation of the property where Publix was built. Poll worker showed me the map. it brought home the thorny issue of forced annexation, that the city is taking over bits of the county, not even close to the city limits, because they can. She says, I would have loved to have voted all the people out who annexed that section of my neighborhood, which that I think that's a state law that has changed since then. Mm-hmm. Yes. People now have to, there has to be a referendum. Correct. And people have to opt in.
And there was one of those on the ballot in Leland.
That's right. There is Landvale Forest, a subdivision in Brunswick County, and they overwhelmingly voted to join the town of Leland.
And the two other referendums, too, Bladenboro, actually, for the second time, they voted to allow the sale of wine and beer in city in the town's limits, and they passed it. They had voted against it some years ago, but they actually went and passed it. So there were a couple of referendums. Not, I don't think you hear about them because they're not countywide oftentimes. But there were a couple, and you know, and they ended up passing. So I thought that was kind of interesting too.
Churchill writes, thanks for keeping relevant issues before the community. I always vote, wish more of my fellow citizens did. Applying the law of large numbers to elections would undoubtedly give us better representation. How do your panel members think about the idea that low turnout makes it much easier for special interest groups to control the outcomes of an election, and after a cycle or three, the entire focus of a community government? Are we seeing special interests represented in the outcomes of these elections?
If you mean special interests of what you kind of think of the term in terms of like PACs and a lot of money, I mean, I don't know if I saw that in this election. I mean, think of, you know, remember again last year, we had a lot of outside groups that were involved in the state legislative races, and the avalanche of mailers that you guys all saw. I mean, we didn't see that this year from outside groups. It is, I mean, it's an interesting question as to why we have these off-year municipal elections the way we do, as opposed to combined with the midterms or presidentials.
Yeah. Does this emailer look familiar? Jeff writes, I think this is a relative. I have a question about the sale of the NHRMC concerning the new board. Is there any prospective pushback on the sale of the NHRMC now that there is a couple of new county board? Okay, well, we didn't have a county race, so I think.
You know, though, this particular gentleman is not the only one who, you know, got confused on that. And again, that speaks to the election cycle and the years we have. There was, I heard, you know, comments and feedback from people who thought the county commissioners were on the, you know, it was tied in together. Not that it was like the county commissioners, but that this was involved with the hospital vote. And again, you know, the city is not the entity that's going to end up being involved on that contractual vote. It'll be the county commissioners. But yes, people, you know, when they lump it all together, they see local government, they see their local, you know, elected officials, which is again, I mean, I'd be interested to hear the pros and cons of it, but it is interesting instead of being able to vote on all together. And I'm sure there are reasons why people like it.
I'm wondering whether city government, what kind of influence city government might wind up having on the sale of NHRMC. I mean, they passed a resolution advocating for something that they then determined was already kind of built into the process, you know, slowing down the process. But will city government officials have influence on how this shakes out?
Now, that's a different question. I mean, I think will it influence? I don't know, but I think as an entity, we asked the question. I asked the question in our lead-up coverage to the council elections and the mayoral elections. Did the candidates think that the city of Wilmington, as a whole, should take a stance on the sale? Now, you know, at this point in time, maybe it may be a little premature. That can be debated, but I would think once the process gets down to the RFPs, and once the process gets down to there being an offer, and once you get through the weeds and find out what it could possibly mean for the community, then I think as an entity, with all of their constituents being county residents, I think it would be incumbent on the city and the city council and the mayor to at least take a stance publicly about the possible sale or the deal, whether it's a partnership or whatever the case may be. And I think they will at that point in time.
What about WAVE transit? And we know the county, New Hanover County, I should say, recently determined that they were not going to continue to fund it. Does that change the dynamic for Wilmington City Council members in terms of how they move forward with WAVE transit? Vicki Janowski.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be, I mean, that was an issue that came up in the city council elections, especially towards the end, once, you know, because that kind of came out late in the cycle. But yeah, if the county does proceed with that course of action, the city is going to have to figure out, you know, how to continue to sustain it, what changes need to be made, how public transit service would be handled. They're going to have to work that out with the county in terms of the routes that are outside the city limits when it, if it were to just become a city bus transit system. And the only other thing I wanted to mention on the hospital, I mean, you know, we should technically say sale or management agreement or continuing as county owned. But, you know, it is a, there's a difference between having influence on it and having a vote on
right.
it. And under the state statutes, the city does not have, you know, final mm-hmm. say on it. But whatever discussions the city and the county want to have together on it, and it'll be interesting to see whether there is any collaboration or if they take these hard lines on it.
Yeah. So when we look at issues across municipalities, I think you can always make an argument that people in Wilmington, for instance, might have something to learn from a struggle that's happening in Leland or Sunset Beach and vice versa. You know, I think there's always a case to be made for paying attention to what's happening in other municipalities. But are there issues common across municipalities that you two can identify that kind of fit that bill? And, you know, one of the things I wonder about, for instance, is climate change and the fact that municipalities now, this is no longer an international and national discussion. This is becoming a local discussion. How are municipalities starting to prepare for sea level rise and increasing severity of storms and frequency of storms? John.
I think the biggest regional issue around here continues to be transportation. Because I think we talked about the bridge, and that's a perfect example of impact on not just two counties, not just two cities, but I think it's an entire region. And whether other projects get funded, if this one would have gotten funded, would other projects have not gotten funded? I think you have to look at those, but I think, you know, you brought up climate change. I don't know how much they learn about something like that as opposed to the transportation and the, again, I use brick and mortar kind of issues that affect people on a daily basis. That's just my
opinion.
Well,
brick and mortar on Water Street in downtown Wilmington. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. you know, sea level rise is affecting the frequency of, you know, what we call sunny day flooding or nuisance flooding, for instance. And that's a city of Wilmington mm-hmm. issue that I don't know if people are talking
right.
about it. Vicki.
I mean, and then if you're asking which topic I think crosses regional lines, I mean, I'm going to throw in economic development in there, obviously, mm-hmm. and the coordination of economic development.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have a question from a listener. What was the biggest surprise of these municipal elections? And we've talked about some of those surprises, but super quick, John Evans, biggest surprise.
How close the mayor's race was in the city of Wilmington. Yeah, I don't think it was any, nothing else came close to me as far as a surprise is concerned.
Vicki Janowski.
I'd echo what John say, and I'd also say even though we're bemoaning 20% turnout, I mean, the fact that you had that on a rainy Tuesday that was a surprise to me.
Yeah, and that.
What about you, Rachel? What was the biggest surprise for you?
Oh, you know, I think it was the election of Shannon Hot Dog Phillips in Sunset Beach. That's this edition of Coastline. Vicki Janowski of the Greater Wilmington Business Journal, John Evans of WECT and WSFX, thank you so much for being with us today.
Glad to be here, Rachel. Thank you.
And thanks to our live studio audience. Really appreciate you being here. Thanks also to our crew, Coastline producer Caitlin Freund, technical director Ken Campbell, Rachel Keith, news producer. Special thanks to Jeff Hunter and Mary Bradley for organizing today's event. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org. Get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 3. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.